fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations.
If you have an injury in the mountains that you can't land a helicopter to, we respond.
You really start heavy probably in September hunting out there, I guess.
Yeah. September's our like the kickoff to the season, really.
Yeah. So that's archery elk, I guess, is kind of where you kick things off.
Yep. So before that is archery antelope. I really haven't messed around with that too much, but a lot of my buddies do and they have a good time doing it.
Really?
But yeah. Have you ever done archery antelope?
No, I've got a few buddies that have gone out and done rifle antelope and they say very well, I don't know. I think actually maybe they went to Montana. They said very target rich environments out there for rifle hunting. I can't imagine. I don't want to say it's easy, but like if you're hunting them with a rifle out there, and especially if you're in some flat country, maybe not necessarily Montana, but I got to figure a guy could get one, right?
Yeah. So the antelope here in Montana are going to be on your eastern side or down south where it is a little more flat. Mm-hmm. It's cool because there's rolling hills. I take that back. 1 year I put in, it's called the 900 tag. It's our archery tag. Mm-hmm. And it overlaps with elk season. And I put in for it a couple years ago and drew back on a few antelope, but they're all long shots. I didn't set up and take the time to hunt on the like hard. It was mainly like in between my elk hunts. Yeah. I would go out and antelope hunt.
It was like, hey, you got the tag, you might as well go kind of deal.
Yeah. And back then, I want to say I wasn't spun up on elk hunting as much as I am now. Mm-hmm. And so after the morning hunt, we'd kick back to camp, you know, even if it was like 4 or 5 miles, regroup, and you got plenty of time before like 3 o'clock when you got to get back in the mountains.
Yeah.
But now I found if you stay in the mountains all day, you get those noon opportunities on bulls. So
that's interesting. So we see that a lot with whitetails during the rut, right? Like in November, a lot of times, especially the first part and then like during or right before, right after lockdown. So like when the does are we have the most does in estrus and then they'll be there at window like 11 to 1 o'clock. There are so many big bucks killed. That's, you're saying there's some of that with bulls too?
Yeah, definitely. A lot of guys like Cam Haynes, he'll say he's killed more noon bucks than or bulls than any other time. But it comes and goes. I think on like the early season when it's warm, those bulls are herding up the harems. They're getting those cows together. And then typically they're bedding nearby a wallow. Mm-hmm. So if you can identify some wallows in an active elk zone and sit on that, like you do your morning, you know, stalks and chasing and bugling and all that, and then it doesn't pan out, you know, hey, this zone is dark timber, north facing. Typically, I've just kind of gotten into elk here a lot. Mm-hmm. It might be a bedding zone. Find some wallows nearby. And a lot of guys sit wallows and do pretty good.
Yeah.
I've missed one bull on a wallow 1 year and it was just me getting so excited shooting right over his back.
Right.
Not ranging him. It was 35 yards and I shot for 40.
Man.
So yeah.
That's not a small target at 35 either.
No.
It'd be easy to do though, I'm sure. Like,
yeah, I was probably off on my 40.
Right.
And then some, you know. So
yeah. Yeah.
You learn as you go.
Dude, guys that tell me that they've never missed anything or they've never hit a deer or whatever bad, like with archery equipment, I'm like, either one, you're lying, or number two, you haven't been doing it that long.
Yeah. Yeah, I made all the mistakes early on, and I still do. You know, I still make a lot of mistakes. But hopefully you can take that mistake window and run it down smaller and make your experience window, you know, bigger. Mm-hmm. And start capitalizing and being more successful year to year.
Yeah.
But going back to your antelope question, so that like early on, I got that 900 tag in Montana. It's a it's a resident. I think it's not over the counter. You got to put in for it, but it's 100%. And It was really fun. We got into a lot of like stocks, but it just, I had to decide, am I gonna antelope hunt or am I gonna elk hunt? And so since then, I've been rifle hunting antelope and they are a lot of fun.
Yeah.
It's, it's whatever you want to make it. You can get it, you can try to get as close as you can, but their best asset is their vision.
Okay. That's what I was
So
going to
yeah,
ask.
they're gonna catch you a long ways out. So it's a lot of like spotting them, figuring out where they're kind of headed to bed, and then getting on a like using topography, getting on a ridge, belly crawling up on top of the ridge, and then getting your range and putting it in. And
Yeah.
yeah, that's what I did this year, and it was a lot of fun.
Awesome. They're pretty skittish too, right? So like I
Oh
would
yeah.
assume archery hunting would be super tough.
So they get more skittish as the season goes on. So during archery, they're rutting. So
Okay.
guys use decoys. They set water holes. There's a lot of different ways to hunt them, but I've heard of buddies shooting them both ways. A lot of guys water hole,
Yeah.
like find the only water in that region and they sit it,
They're going to be
whether
there at some
blind
point.
or yep,
Yeah.
yep. So,
Right.
and it's cool. It sounds fun. I'm just chasing bulls.
I don't blame you. That seems way more fun. And you guys had some luck with that this year too, right?
Yeah, and Josh.
Yeah.
So Josh Fields, excuse me, him and I, we drew a coveted tag here in Montana. So it's a little different than normal years. Had a lot of points, drew this tag, this archery only tag. And I'm telling you what, it was insane. It was the best season I've ever seen in my life or
Yeah.
had in my life. Unlike hunting public land anywhere else, it was just packed with like high percentage of bulls. And to the point where normally in archery, I don't carry a spotting scope. Like if one's bugling, I'm gonna work it, get
Yeah.
in, and then if he's like a raghorn, I may decide at that point whether I'm gonna continue to pursue it. But on this hunt, there's so many different elk, so many different bulls, and in the morning you find them and get on them with your spotter and decide, hey, is this what I'm looking for? Is this not what I'm looking for? And it was like, can't remember exactly how much time I spent over there. I went for opening week with Josh. We probably put in 6 days, got into tons of different bulls, and it ramped up from there. Came home for like a week and then went over indefinitely.
Yeah.
And I shot them day 7 or 8 of my second trip.
So you're
So,
2 weeks in, basically.
yeah,
Yeah.
yep.
But now
And
if you weren't being picky, how soon could you have killed one?
probably the first day,
Yeah.
like they were pretty easy to pattern because it was opening day. We were there the day before and we were watching them like funnel out of the same path every day into these alfalfa fields.
Yeah.
So you knew if you got the wind right, you could probably set up at a pinch point and have a shot, like a close range shot on a bull.
Yeah. That's
So.
like you said, I guess that'd be a whole different story of I'm not just gonna shoot the first legal bull or whatever, right? It's like
Yeah.
there's so many around that you're able to actually pick one that is worth packing out.
Yeah, and it's funny because yeah, everybody has their own internal goals or size that you're looking for.
Yeah.
I've shot a lot of elk over the years, and I was going over there with like the goal of a 340 or bigger, and I didn't achieve that goal, and I'll get into that story. But
Okay.
I shot a decent, respectable bull, and I'm very happy with it. Even
Yeah.
after he went down, I was like, this is awesome. And it was well worth it. But you got to decide if you're going to eat your tag. And I've done that before. I
Yep.
had the Idaho tag, an Idaho tag, and passed on lots of little bulls, knowing there was bigger bulls there, and came home empty handed.
Yeah.
But I went in there and I had a great season that year. Like that Idaho hunt, I was stoked, was happy with how I performed there and my choices that I made. But yeah, I kind of want to go back and get redemption, but Idaho's changed the
Yeah.
way they do their tags now and
Oh,
it's a
really?
lot more difficult. Yeah. I mean, I could still get it. It's just going to take a few years to build points
Right.
if
Okay.
they do point. I actually don't know a ton about that, how they've changed it. I just know it's a lot different.
Man, that you could that
So.
gets super complicated from state to state, seems like, to keep up with for a guy that's like for your home state, I'm sure you know Montana like the back of your hand, but if you're talking about starting to look at Colorado, Arizona, Idaho, Utah, whatever, like you could go for
Yeah.
days on figuring point systems out and stuff.
Yeah, they're all different. I know Montana really well, and even having opportunities in other states is hard because I just love chasing big muleys and bulls here in Montana. So like that takes time. And then my wife likes to go hunting now with me. Like we do a week-long rifle hunt in November. And now my daughter's she just turned 13 this weekend. And
That makes you old, I think.
it does. Look at my beard, yeah.
You can blame her for those.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so at 10, she can apprentice hunt.
Okay.
And we did for 2 years. She has to be with me. And this next season will be the first season she can hunt on her own and also hunt for an elk. And so, and she did hunter safety. I did that with her. And yeah, it was awesome. But she shot a couple whitetails so far.
Yeah.
So with a
Awesome.
rifle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is she
So
into the archery stuff yet?
not yet. I'm planning to get her a bow, more of just like something to do
Yeah.
for fun, because I'm out there shooting quite a bit. And she's expressed interest in it, and I think she would really enjoy it. So
Right. Yeah, that's a
yeah.
good thing for them to get their hands on and do. And man, around here, we've gone and done like these it's S3DA. They do these shoots and like big national and state shoots and stuff, and they give away like tens of thousands of dollars of scholarships for
Oh,
archery
no
stuff.
kidding.
Yeah, it's crazy the amount of money that they're giving away to these kids for sh
Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. You know what's slower than a pace car? Waiting at the car wash. That's when I fire up Chumba Casino. It turns those slow minutes into fast fun. With new games every week, you'll never get bored. Next time you're stuck in the slow lane, speed up with Chumba. Play now at chumbacasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Shooting a bow.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, that I love anything that can, you know, with my daughter, I always said I'm not going to force anything on her. I might have said this in the last time we talked, but she goes to a small school here. It's a public school, but it's a really rural school, and so
Yeah.
there's not a lot of like students in her class. And when she was nine, I was asking her if she wanted to apprentice hunt with me. And you know, she was hemming and hawing about it. I pursue it hard. Rose had gotten into it, my wife. She grew up kind of doing it, but got into the elk hunts with me. And it's more of like our season, her and I, it's our seasonal like getaway. We
Yeah.
like by then hopefully I've killed a bull, so it's just focus on her.
Yeah.
And we have a great time. It's usually cold. We're usually into elk and it's rifle hunting. But anyway, so with my daughter, I didn't want to, you don't want to force anything on your kids, but she was naturally around it. And I really think it was the boys in her class that were talking about going out with their dads. And she's like, "Dad, I want to shoot a big buck this year." And I was like, all right, we'll do it. But we're going to put the work in." So I got her a Creedmoor. It was a Christensen Ridgeline with a suppressor. And so it's super short, light. Not a big kick gun, and those suppressors for kids, I'm a big believer in.
Oh yeah.
You know, and yeah, and it's been fun so far.
Awesome. Awesome. There, one of the benefits, like guys will argue till they're blue in the face about like crossbows being legal here in Illinois now for like the whole archery season. But one of the biggest benefits I've seen is kids
Okay.
and women, honestly, too, is getting into
Yep.
archery hunting with the crossbows because they can use them now. Like used to, you had to have a waiver, like a medical waiver, to even be able to
Sure.
use a crossbow, but now everybody's open to it. And again, there's a lot that comes with that. But one of the benefits I've seen is a lot more kids that are getting to hunt archery season, and they're not just having to hunt like the youth firearm and then the other 7 days of firearm season or whatever. So just like what you're talking about with that suppressor and getting them the right gun, like you
Yeah.
could scare a kid off easily if you're doing the wrong things to start with.
For sure. Yeah. I don't have any experience with crossbows. I really don't even don't I don't really know much about them at all. But I could see like in your community, because we don't maybe we have crossbows out here. It's not a talked about
Dude, it would
thing.
be such a pain to lug around the mountain, I would imagine. They're so
Okay, they're
heavy.
pretty heavy.
Yeah.
Okay. But I could see it being an intro piece for archery equipment, because it has like a little asterisk next to it.
Yes.
You know, like I'm starting out on a crossbow, but you know, like the next thing is to get the bow.
Yes,
So
yes.
yeah, that's cool.
It's kind of a gateway drug for some people. Now, there are
Yeah.
other people, and this is where I kind of think the, I don't know if I should say problem, but like There's the guys who only do it because it's easier and they want like the end result of the picture with the buck. You know what I mean?
Right. No, I know exactly what you're talking about. Yep.
And to me, like what I always tell guys, or we talk about it, I don't think that's a crossbow problem. I think that's a person, like the end user problem. But there is a lot of people where it's like a gateway drug into archery because, like I said, they get to hunt more. They're like, they see the opportunity. And then it's like, okay, it's not a gun, but it's still crosshairs and pulling a trigger. And now I've got pretty good at that. I want more. You know what I mean? I want the next thing. And it's.
So what's the range on a crossbow?
Depending on what you get. Like if you get a $3,000, $4,000 Raven and you practice, you could be consistent at 70 to 80 yards, I would say.
No kidding.
Now,
okay.
Are you going to shoot that on a whitetail? Hopefully not, because just a lot of things can happen at 80 yards. But like those things are nails at 70, 80 yards if you practice. I think one of them, they advertise consistency at 100 yards, but obviously guys aren't just – you could probably pull it out of the package and hit a target at 100 yards, but you're not going to be lethal all the time. But, they're definitely a big advantage over – your regular, even compound archery stuff. Like it's a different game.
Yeah,
it is.
Yep. Well, it's the same thing in the bow woods with elk, you know, they're a big target, like you mentioned. And guys, if you get focused on that end product, you know, like the picture for Instagram or whatever, I've seen it. I was in bow camp 2 years ago and a buddy of mine shot a bull. I'm not going to go into names.
Okay.
Shot a bull and couldn't recover it for 2 days and it spoiled. And it was a big bull. And my other buddy shot shot a cow. We got it out and he offered to swap all the meat for the head that my buddy had. Yeah. It was his first year. He didn't know what he was talking about. Yeah. And I understand, but we had a conversation around the fireplace, you know, and it's like, it takes time. I don't know what to say. You know my opinion without saying it.
I got you. It's a byproduct of the social media stuff. I mean, it is.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
I don't know. There's a whole rabbit hole we could go down there too, as far as like why people do it. But it's kind of what you're talking about too. Like you've been hunting elk for a long time. You know what you want. Like sometimes you're willing to eat a tag if you can't get the one you're after. And like I'm the same way with whitetails. I want to shoot a mature buck. And like it doesn't have to be the biggest rack, but I want it to be a mature deer. Not everybody's got that same goal. Where I think we run into issues as a whole hunting community, and I'm sure you see this out west too, is guys bashing on somebody for shooting like maybe it's a spike out there, or like here it's a 2 or 3 year old buck. And it's like, just because that's not what you want to shoot doesn't mean it's not okay for them, you know?
Yeah. And I'll say straight up too, typically with a general tag archery, I'll shoot not any legal bull, but I'll shoot a bull. I'm filling the freezer.
Yeah.
And that's going back to that conversation about all the Western states, Montana, and they're getting kind of a rep for it, is more of an opportunity state. They want anybody to be able to go out and hunt an elk.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas like Arizona, you're going to wait, or New Mexico, you're going to wait years, even as a resident, to pull a tag. And so maybe you're a little more careful on what you shoot.
Right.
With trophy tags, or I wouldn't even say trophy tags, but like that Idaho tag I had, I knew I probably am not coming back here for a couple of years if I do.
Yeah.
And so I want to treat it like it's kind of a special tag. And so, cause I still have my Montana tag. So
yeah.
And I don't have any problems with that. I do know that there's a argument to be said, Eastern Montana, where there's a lot of muleys and you can hunt them in Montana right now during the rut.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of little bucks getting shot and it's not allowing that upper age class to produce.
Yeah.
It is what it is. I'll put my vote in. I'm not going to worry about things I can't control.
Yeah.
And I can hunt around Western Montana and go up high in the mountains and find big bucks.
Yeah.
So, and guys aren't driving around shooting them.
Yeah.
So,
it's a little bit different over there.
Yeah. Yeah. And I love it. I love putting like my mountaineering, my endurance cap on and my hunting cap on at the same time and getting after it, you know?
Yeah. I just talked to two episodes ago, Kurt Belding, who Western Obsessions TV, he's on Carbon TV and a couple other things. He does a ton of Western stuff. He's actually in Colorado, but he was talking about the same thing. He's like, Yeah, that end result, the killing the bull or whatever, is awesome. But the adventure part of it is like way over half the fun. You know what I mean?
For sure. And so I shot a decent buck this year, rifle, a muley buck up high. Mm-hmm. It was 5 miles up, and I was solo. And I didn't even put tape on it. It's a good buck. It's got some kickers on it. Yeah. And I just got it back from the taxidermist. I got it on the mantle. And I look at that every morning. I drink coffee here at home, and I'm just smiling. Like, that was an amazing hunt. Yeah. And the part on the mantle is just the memory part. It's like a photograph.
Yeah.
You know, it's not why I pursued that animal. Like, we're eating that muley not every night, but we eat it often, you know, mix it in with elk. And it's great.
Yeah.
Like, it's an old mountain buck, and it, like, I properly prepare it, you know, and put it on the smoker and make it taste good. And my family doesn't know the difference.
Exactly. Well, I'm sure you know what you're doing too. That's something that, like, a lot of people say, well, I don't want that big old nasty buck. Well, okay, it's probably not going to be as tender as a fawn, but if you take care of it after you shoot it, you take care of the meat the whole time, and you keep everything clean, and then you know how to cook it, prep it, and cook it. Like you said, they can't tell the difference. It's still good, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and going to antelope is amazing as
well.
Is
it really?
Have you ever had antelope?
I don't think I have, actually. That's one of the wild games that I have not had.
It's one of my top.
Really?
It's still below elk, but an antelope burger or an antelope steak is, and I don't mix it. I don't mix anything with a burger. I just grind it.
Yeah.
Cut all the fat off it, everything I can.
Are they pretty lean?
They're really lean, and they're small.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're smaller than probably a whitetail.
Yeah.
One thing though with antelope is, and I believe this theory, this is a theory amongst hunters, is if you catch an antelope on the dead sprint because he's running from you and you drop him, he's got adrenaline pumping through his meat. Mm-hmm. Like this, the antelope I shot this year, it was a spot and stalk, got in, they didn't know I was there, belly crawled up, bipod out, range, it was 4:15, put the dope in, shot him, and I watched him forever. He just stood there. And he turned so I couldn't see the entrance hole. Mm-hmm. And I was shooting a 6.5 PRC that day.
Yeah.
And he stood there for a while.
Hey, it's Bubba Wallace from 2311 Racing. You know what it feels like forever? Sitting on a plane waiting for takeoff. Good thing I've got Chumba Casino. With daily boosts and social casino games on tap, this is the kind of fun that makes time fly. Why not turbocharge your downtime? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
And then tipped over. But he didn't run. He wasn't like shocked. That antelope's great.
Yeah.
And but if I had like hit a bad shot and he's running and I'm following up.
Right.
You're going to be able to identify that.
You spook him. They bounce off and stop and you get a shot off. I think there's something to that.
Yeah. 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 Especially with those speed goats. But, yeah. But yeah, man, do you want me to go into the elk hunt?
Yeah, that's where I was just about to go.
Okay,
let's get into that a little bit.
So Fieldsy and I put him in. I had a bunch of points this year, and we were bouncing ideas off each other, and we hunt really well together. We're buddies that kind of dump out solo and go after elk.
Yeah.
And over the years, that's what I found to be the best system. I like to call, so does Josh. But at some point, if you can sneak in and stick one, like that's the ultimate. And that's what happened to me this year.
Okay.
And I can send you a couple clips if you want.
Yeah.
Of some sick encounters I had with bulls that I passed on that were probably bigger than the one I ended up shooting.
Really?
it's hard to say at that level. I got really good at judging this year with Josh's help. Because he's really good at judging those 350 plus bulls and what you're looking at.
Mm-hmm.
Where for years I've been just a public land guy, knowing what like 300 and below and 300 and above, right in that median looks like. But the real big dudes, like the width and the tine length, and that was what this hunt was about. It was like, okay, we're gonna discard that one. How do you get in on this other one? And also there's all these bulls bachelored up trying to get cows because there's like way more bull to cow ratio there.
Okay.
And so you're putting a stock in on a bull and there's like three bulls that you're going to encounter before you get to the one you're trying to kill. So it was tricky.
Wading your way through them.
Yeah. But man, what a fun season. We set up a hard camp with my camper and my buddy Tanner came and Tanner does a ton of photography stuff. We GoPro the whole thing, which obviously for hunting, like as we go into the YouTube stuff, not ideal for like distance and being able to see what you're doing.
Yeah.
I'm starting.
Right.
And, but Tanner, man, he's a high end photographer. He works with Seeger and a bunch of other, Yeti, bunch of companies, but, he came over for the whole hunt just to check it out. Cause he's like, dude, this is like the mecca of elk hunting.
Yeah. Just to be there.
It was awesome. Josh had a tag in his pocket, but he was like, listen, this is your points. I want you to kill first, you draw blood first, and then I'll start hunting. But I'm like, dude, if opportunity presents itself to you, you're taking the bull. So that's kind of how we approached it. We would get in the morning, locate bulls, and start working them. And I'm telling you what, we bugled, but it was more to find where they were and then figure out, hey, does this bull have cows? Because if it doesn't, we probably don't want to chase it.
Mm-hmm.
If we can get eyes on, we're going to see how big it is. And just kind of weed them out like that, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Because a smaller bull is going to be a satellite, and even satellites over there are big bulls.
Right.
And they could be small. I mean, not all of them are huge.
Yeah. But the big herd bulls are the ones you're after, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And a herd bull, it's not necessarily what we're after because it's about aggression and attitude to become a herd bull.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah.
Yep. And so he may not have the best genetics.
Yeah.
He just has the aggression and those cows are like, I want you to breed me.
Yeah.
So they all, you know, gather up with the herd bull,
yeah,
with that particular bull. And so, man, it was every single day I was at full draw, letting down. I was checking wind. I'd have opportunities where Josh would be cow calling or bugling behind me if we had a setup like that. The wind would be going straight to my left and the bull would come up from my left, like right in my wind tunnel.
Mm-hmm.
And it was bizarre because it's just a target rich environment and it's unlike anything I've ever experienced and hope to again in my life. Who knows if I do.
Yeah.
But it satisfied my quench for hunting elk and I'll still do it,
yeah,
but I'll go back to the public ground.
Right.
But the day that I killed my bull, it was Josh, had to go back on Sunday and this was a Saturday after, 7 days of hunting. So we've been hunting together for the whole week and he was going to come back down, but he had like a 5 day gap and I was off for the next 14 days.
Mm-hmm.
So I had that was kind of in my mind. I was doing I wanted a 340 bull or bigger in my own personal, like level, but now I'm halfway into my 14 days that I had off.
Mm-hmm.
And I know this is my last day with Josh. So that might have played a factor because I got a buddy to help me carry meat.
Oh, yeah. It should play a factor.
That's a big, big deal. So that morning, we went into the zone and I got up there first. Josh wanted to check another spot. As soon as I got to the top of this ridge, I kind of took my pack off because I'm hiking fast and you're down to your base layer.
Mm-hmm.
It's cold. But while you're hiking, you're shedding layers. You should start cold and warm up, but
yeah.
I like would throw a puffy on and then like 10 minutes in, drop it.
Right.
Get up to the ridge top. It probably took 45 minutes or so to get there. It wasn't bad. And, as soon as I'm dropping my pack, I'm unbuckling my sternum and my hip belt. I hear a rip. Like it sounded like 100 yards from me. A bugle is just a bull is ripping over the top of the mountain and it's now starting to get daylight. And, I was by myself, but I had just taken my pack off. So I'm like, well, let me check out what this is before Josh gets here. He'll probably be about an hour the way that he took to get up to me from when I was there. So I glass, can't see anything just with my bow. I drop my pack. which is not normally what I do. I usually carry my pack every single place I go because you just never know where you're going to leapfrog to in the West. And if something comes in, you want your rescue gear, you know.
Next thing you know, you're like half a mile from where you dropped your pack.
Yeah, and then a rainstorm comes in. But anyway, so I dropped my pack and start in on these bulls, or this one bull that's bugling. I get in tight, probably to the closest bull, I was 40 yards, just using the timber to like kind of close the distance. Got in tight and see it's a raghorn. I like find the next bull, it's a raghorn, and they're all like the raghorns are racking with each other. They are just fighting. They're having a good time, but there's still one bugling beyond it that's out of range for me. And I finally find it, put glass on it, and he's like maybe a 305 bull. He's not big enough that I would have considered to be a herd bull, but maybe the herd bull got shot. And now they've like re-herded up, but there was only probably three or four cows with this one bull. So I was like, okay, sick. I'm going to disregard everyone that I'm looking at. And I go back up to the top of the mountain. Josh was just getting there. And I'm like, he's like, where were you at? And I was like, did you not hear these bulls just ripping? He's like, no, let's go. And I'm like explaining, like, now I ruled them all out. And he's like, okay. And Josh is a better elk hunter than me. He is a stud. He's one of the best in the world. And he was like, dude, I'm proud of you for like holding to your guns. Like a lot of people with this tag would probably take the first opportunity. But you know, I still got seven more days. This is my last day with Josh. He's got to come back to work, but this is, I'm like, no, dude, this is what it's about. So right after that happens, we hear another bull bugle and off like a different direction. So we just take off after it. Get in tight. It's moving now to its bedding zone. We hear another faint bugle a long ways away. We start kind of just herding this, like dog in this herd. And meaning like we're following it. The wind's good. They don't know we're there, but we're staying far enough back. We're not going to blow anything out. We kind of set up, sit down. Because now we can't hear any bugling. And this is like an hour and a half later. It's the sun's coming up. Now it's getting warm. And we all of a sudden hear just like a elk orgy, like rutting activity. There's a steep canyon in front of us and we just hear ripping bugles. Like it went like an hour without anything. And now all of a sudden the forest is on fire and there's bulls ripping. So I was like, all right. And Josh was like, dude, just go in there and slaughter one, like go in there and place your arrow. I'm like, yeah, actually that's probably the best because they're already working. So if you come in as another group, it may work in your favor, but it may not. So I'm like, I think I can slip in on these guys. And the thermals were still working in our favor. They were coming down the mountain, even though the sun was starting to poke up, but in the shade, they're still coming down. So I get down below them and start working up and I start seeing the bulls and they're like 200 yards in front of me, but they're moving. And they're just running into each other. They're crashing horns and they're, but then they would disengage and go back and check their herds, their harems. And every one of them had probably 15 to 20 cows and there's three bulls.
Really?
Yep. There's three bulls. I put my binos on them and I like greenlit every one of them. The lowest was a 340, like big backs, decent spread. The biggest was probably a 365. 360, 365, and then the other one was right in between. So in my mind, I was like, I would...
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNC 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
To any one of these bulls, Josh is here. It's his last day. I'm going to try to sneak in and get an opportunity. What I didn't realize was there was a fourth bull in there. It was the one I ended up shooting.
Of course.
And it was awesome. It was a, it was an amazing hunt. So this happened for like 20 minutes. It's in my face, bugles. I'm sneaking in. I'm getting close, getting tight. And there's two bulls off to my right. It ended up being three. And my this one is off to my left. So I think, okay, two bulls are over here. One's off to my left. They're going to cross in front of me somewhere. And I have shooting lanes. So I kind of range everything, knock an arrow, and I'm just, I'm like, I'm not going to press it anymore because I could get busted by a cow. Because the cows are staying behind the bulls, making the moves on like where they're going to bed. And they're going to bed within kind of earshot of each other, but not right on top of each other, so they don't lose. So the cows stay with the bulls.
Yeah.
So, mind you, I've already greenlit every bull like that I'm seeing.
Mm-hmm.
So now I've knocked an arrow. I hear these bulls are crashing. They're probably 150 yards to my right, and I'm not really seeing them very well, but I can make movement out. And I'm hearing mews everywhere, like cow mews. They're all going crazy.
Mm-hmm.
This bull kicks loose. He comes down on the bottom through the like little like quakies, aspens, tamaracks, comes up, and I'm like, oh, he's 20 yards. And I, like a lot of times what I do if I'm already like set on shooting this thing,
mm-hmm.
I'm not going to even look at its rack. Like I don't want to focus on that. I'm going to pick my spot and make a good shot. So as he's coming through the bottom, I draw back. He comes up to like my shooting lane and stops like in a thick patch,
mm-hmm.
screams, lets out a ripping bugle, and then walks out into my lane. And I'm at full draw. And I thought he was going to naturally stop, but he's like taking like two steps and he's already across my shooting lane and mm-hmm. his head's into the trees. And I didn't have a reed in my mouth. I usually do, but I was just like, hey. Like it wasn't like a meow, right. Like or any kind of elk sound. I was just like, hey. And he stops, but I just settle mm-hmm. and perfect shot right behind the shoulder. He wheels, and when he wheeled, I saw his backs and they weren't like what I had been looking at.
Right.
And I was like, where was that bull? That is not what I just looked at.
Uh-huh.
And he ran 30 yards and I heard him tip over. So I just like made a onyx pin and I'm like, I'm not even going to go up to him right now. Josh is behind me. I didn't realize how far I'd gone. I'd probably gone a mile and a half from Josh. He's like, I'm just going to chill here, listen for other activity, but go after those guys.
Mm-hmm.
So I cruised back to the road that Josh was on. It was like a side cut road up on a mountainside. So I like hike back, cruise up, and he's asleep in the sun with his cap over his face. And I thought he was goofing off.
Uh-huh.
So I go up to him and I'm like standing there for a second. Then I kick his feet. He's like, oh, hey, buddy. He's like, how'd that go? You kill a bull? I'm like, yep, killed a bull. And he's like, no, you didn't. And I'm like, yeah, dude, I just like zipped a bull. But, and he was stoked.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, but it's small, dude. And he's like, he's like, Nelly, what'd you do, man? So I was like, yeah, dude, I'm not super stoked. I don't know. I haven't gone up to it,
yeah.
But it's not what we were after this week. He's like, all right, well, let's go get it. And so now it's probably 45 minutes. We're into the bull and he found it first. We were like, I was like, this is where I shot from. Got back to my point. This is where I shot from. I haven't even looked for blood. I know he's down. Like I heard him tip over.
Mm-hmm.
And actually right after I shot, because he had just let the bugle out at the edge of the road, this other herd bull comes in and finds him down because he's making some sort of sounds, but he hits him on the ground a couple times.
Yeah.
And so I kind of know generally, but now I'm back and I'm trying to identify the forest and I got, okay, yeah, this is where I shot from. Oh, and I'd stuck an arrow in the ground where I shot from.
Yeah.
And so we get back there. Josh finds him and he's like, hey, Nelly, this isn't a small bull, dude. So it was awesome. I'm going to be dropping that film here in the next few weeks,
sweet.
But it was a good time. I wish I had had the GoPro on my head because that encounter was all of my encounters that week were insane.
Yeah.
But I documented it really well. I think I will put together a pretty good film. Obviously you're not going to see the shot, but you'll see the aftermath and quartering it up and stuff like that. But anyway, it was probably a 315 to 320 bull.
There's nothing wrong with that, right?
Dude, just a great, great archery bull. And I was super, super happy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So we quartered it, got into game bags, had probably a 4 mile hike back to where we could get a truck.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just by the end of the day, we were drinking whiskey in town. So
that's the perfect day, right?
It was awesome. We were talking about whiskey like all week. We're like, all right,
when
whoever
this is
kills
over.
First. Yep. Yep, we're gonna have a shot.
You gotta have a little carrot, right? Out in front of the horse.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Oh shoot. I had very similar situation one time. I was hunting a specific area for deer, and I'd hunted it throughout this week, and I had seen a buck that was an older deer. He wasn't huge, but like mid-130s, 8-pointer. And I was like, that's an old mature deer. If he comes in, I'll shoot him. So I had hunted. This was like the third day I'd hunted in there within a week. Weather was good. They didn't know I was there, all that good stuff. So I'm sitting there early morning. I see one cruising on a ditch probably 200 yards away. I put the binos on him real quick. It's an 8-pointer. He's walking similar to this old deer because that old deer had a pretty distinct gait. And I was like, okay, that's him. Put the binos down. I hit the rattling antlers together. Well, there's a fence row that runs this way, north and south beside me. The deer goes behind the fence row, and I lose him. Next thing I know, I'm catching flashes of him coming. I'm like, sweet, he's coming in. That's the one I want. And like you said, if I see it, I think, hey, shooter, then I don't pay attention to the antlers again, right?
Yeah. So
finally, he makes the opening in the fence row, which is about 45 yards. He comes out, and he gets to 30. I draw back, I shoot, and of course, it just drops him dead in his tracks.
Yeah,
like I hit him high shoulder, right where their spine comes down, you know, and just dropped him.
Yep.
And I'm looking at him, and I'm like, that is not the deer I thought it was. Like, well, I guess I'll shoot him again, because, you know, I spine shot him, so I shoot him again.
Yeah.
Walk up to him, sure enough, it's like 115-inch, 2.5-year-old 9-pointer. I'm like, not exactly what I was wanting. Cool, yeah. But of course, like, the two-year-old's going to come into the rattling, right? Like, if it was that mature buck, he probably wouldn't even have paid any attention to it. But it was one of those same deals you're talking about. Like, I knew it was that deer in my head when I first saw him, never paid attention again. It happened so fast after he came out that I just laced him, and that was it. And then I was
I was so disappointed. You got to just be happy.
It was, I mean, like, hey, I got one down. That's what I'm out here for. I'm not eating a tag, whatever. And it's kind of like, you got to pay your dues too, you know? At that time, I hadn't shot a lot of racked bucks. So, you know, it was it's one of those. You just pay your dues, and you can't always shoot the big ones the first time out. Those are the guys, like, here at the shop, we get a lot of kids that'll come in and they shoot like 150, 160 inch deer. And I'm like, dude, you're not supposed to do that.
Because the next one, you.
Exactly. Yeah. That can ruin you from the start.
Yeah, my daughter, she's like, I want to shoot a big bull, you know, this year. And I'm like, well, let's start with a cow, you know, like just to get used to it and to see the work that's involved.
Yes.
So yeah, I was super happy. After it all played out, before I went and grabbed Josh, I was like, man, thank you, Lord. This is an awesome hunt. I'm stoked to be here. We were lucky to live where we do and do what we do.
Yeah.
Like, I'm happy. Yeah. Like, there's zero regret. And man, I shot a nice bull elk with my bow.
So very few, honestly, in the whole scope of everybody that hunts, few people have done that. So, I mean, like, that's something in its own, just to be, like, you're talking about being 4 miles. A lot of guys can't even walk 4 miles on flat ground. You know, you know what I mean?
Yeah. So, it's hard when buddies want to come out and hunt to try to be like, hey, this is what you should expect.
Yeah.
Like, especially archery, there's not a lot of sleeping. Mm-hmm. Like, we got to move way before daylight, and we're getting back way after dark.
Mm-hmm.
And then got to eat. So we're cooking something up, depending on how we're hunting, whether it's spike camp or back to a hard camp.
Right.
But then rifle is way different. It's like, start at daylight, end at be back to the truck by dark.
Yeah.
And we kind of, if you can find them, you can kill them.
Right.
Generally.
You don't have to close the distance, obviously, nearly as much.
Right. Yeah. My wife shot a decent bull and rifle.
Yeah.
And it was a really fun hunt. It was third week of November, I want to say. And it was tough. It was warm here in Montana this past season. So nothing's moving. Like, a lot of times weather is what moves those towards their winter grounds.
Yeah.
And we're hunting those like in between spots in the mountains. But we probably put 4 days in before I found a bull and I caught him right at last light. Just like moving, like glassing as hard as I can for like 5 minutes and then moving again to look at different terrain. And this bull, I was like panning with off my tripod with my spotter and zipped right past a brown spot, came back to it. And there's a bull standing there. And I was like, hey, babe, come check this bull out. Be- before she got...
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Over there, he was back in the timber. And it was a little pocket, probably 200 yards by 200 yards of just timber. And everything was bare around it. And it was like a flat bench. And I'm like, he is not going anywhere. He'll be there tomorrow.
Right.
So we got the wind right. We got above him. We stalked slowly down through the timber. And she shot him in his bed.
Nice.
And it was awesome. It was a really good hunt.
Yeah, those are the kind you like for sure.
Yeah.
You were talking about judging bulls, like on the hoof and stuff. So one thing we run into a lot, like the two bucks that I shot this year, for example, the first one, smaller racked, but he was 260 pounds on the hoof, which is a big whitetail and for around here even. And we've got some bigger ones than a lot of places.
Yeah, that sounds like a big buck.
But then the second one I shot was, we didn't weigh him, but he was probably more around 200, 210. So those smaller bodied bucks, like the second one I shot was right at 150, just over 150. But on the hoof, he looked like 160, 165 because he was smaller bodied. Do you run into that with elk or most bulls, once they hit a certain age, pretty similar in body size?
I would say they're pretty similar.
Yeah.
Not quite like you would see with a deer. And the rut affects all that.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
If you're hunting them in arch or in rifle, they're post-rut bulls and they're typically bachelored up and they've worn down a lot of their fat. They're staying in one spot. They're not moving a lot.
Yeah.
So they're going to be lighter, like 700 to 800 pounds.
Yeah.
But then you go to like a rifle or archery bull and you're talking, you know, big weight.
Yeah.
So yeah, but what we're looking at is pretty much similar all across the board. Some of them, the little raghorns, you can tell right away when you look at them, just the way they carry themselves, like even being spooked and skittish.
Right.
The other thing too, with a rifle hunt, if you find bulls with cows, like later rifle, that's not a mature bull because the mature bull is going to be off bachelored up with other mature bulls.
Yeah.
So like little spikes, rags, branch antlered, they're going to be with the cows.
Yeah.
And until they get kicked out like the next year.
Yeah. The big bulls know that the party's over, right?
Yeah.
Been there, done that.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
But it's a blast. I'm telling you, it's like when you look at a bull, like now after hunting where I was hunting with Josh, when you see a big bull, you're like, that's a honyocker.
It's just
that's a
different.
Big guy. Yeah.
Yeah, no doubt. So the YouTube stuff, you said that stuff's going to come out soon. Well, I was just looking at it earlier. You've got 10 videos on there right now. So fairly early on in your YouTube journey for sure, right? But like the Buffalo video did really well. And your other stuff, like especially for having 10 videos, your other stuff's doing good too.
Sorry to cut you off.
No.
I have no idea what to expect there. And that Buffalo video is kind of, you know, it's a canned hunt in South Dakota. It's not something I've ever done before.
Mm-hmm.
With a guide, you know, and it crushed. I mean, for me,
it did really well.
Views.
Yeah.
Yep. And so I don't understand, how that algorithm works yet.
Mm-hmm.
And also I know I'm like brand new to it. So I'm kind of just presenting my story. I'll probably hopefully get better as I go.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
And so right now I'm in the middle of sled season and snowmobiling. And so I'm presenting a lot of snowmobile videos and I had this buffalo hunt. I'm like, I should put this together and just pump it out just to get something else. Cause I'm going to be doing a lot of hunts even when I don't kill.
Yeah.
Cause like that buck that I shot, I probably hunted that zone way up 5 miles up, probably 7 days before I shot that buck.
Mm-hmm.
And it was with not seeing any deer, just tracks, you know? So I knew there was bucks in the area.
Yeah.
But I'm gonna present like what I do. You know what I mean?
What's that adventure part of it we're talking about?
Yeah. And so I don't really know what to expect. Also, like a lot of the following that I've had on YouTube came from like that one day on Andy's podcast where he was like, hey, so what are you doing? I'm like, I'm gonna start this YouTube thing and boom, like 400 people signed up or whatever. So it's new, very new to me. But I'm like, I'm going to keep doing it. I'm going to try to drop like every week. I might switch it to like every other week. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Depending on how things go or how, like what activity I'm in. Cause I'm still doing family trips. I'm still,
yeah,
you know, balancing life.
Yeah.
Like this weekend we're headed for my daughter's birthday. She just turned 13, I think I was saying, but her and a couple girlfriends and my wife and I were going to a ski area in southern Montana. And I'll probably film some of it, but also it's like, she's got friends. I don't know if their parents are, you know, so it's going to be very bland in that regard. But if there's, we're getting a gnarly storm, I'm looking at it and just nuking snow outside. So if we get like some deep pow, I'll probably take some snowboard videos and stuff like that for this trip. But I've also learned, like I had years of video that I thought would be great. Okay, when I finally like start my channel, mm-hmm. I have all this content that I can start pulling from. Mm-hmm. And what I've learned is just random content doesn't really translate into a video. It has to have kind of a progression and a story and like a purpose. Mm-hmm. So a lot of it's like not really that beneficial. So it's now from here forward, I know how to like, I got to get used to talking on the camera and,
Dude, that's a tough one to get over if you're not used to it too. It's weird. It's weird.
And yeah, dude, you do really well. but from our backgrounds, mm-hmm. like what we do for work, it's a pretty like quiet profession.
Right.
And a lot of my culture, like guys at work are like, oh, I saw you started a YouTube. Uh-huh. Well, I'm not filming myself at work, like doing cases and like, you know, working that kind of thing. So it's coming from a background of like, you're quiet for a lot of years. If you're in the paper, you owe somebody ice
cream. Probably
not
good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's like a firefighter thing I found out. Like one day I was on the front page and my buddies from the fire department are like, hey, you owe us all ice cream because you landed on the front page.
Yeah. Yep.
So it's like a culture of not being public to now being like, I've got a year until I retire and I've got 19 on here at my department and that I'm eligible. We'll see if I do. But starting to like, in a week I head to Australia to hunt red stag.
Yeah, that's gonna be
awesome. So I'm gonna film that whole hunt and like the fallow deer and just camp life and kind of the whole, it'll probably be several videos because I don't want to make them like 2 hour long videos.
Yeah, that's tough.
Yeah,
it's a tough editing
stuff.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, and you know, I told you I was talking to Kurt. He does a lot of really well produced stuff and we were talking about this a little bit, like since you're doing the editing. Like you just said, you've got all this content from before and you're thinking it could be good. But now that you get into editing, you kind of start to know like what to look for and what shots I need and what do I actually need to get to tell this story? Because like the guys on my team, they're getting better. We're all getting better as we go because we're all fairly new at that part of it. But it's like I tell them all the time, I'm like, hey, I need more than just the deer walking into the shot because I can't make a 12-minute video out of 2 minutes. Of video,
right.
You know what I mean? So I got to have the B-roll and to be able to tell the story. So if you're editing, now it's like, oh, hey,
yeah,
like that light bulb comes on. It's like, I need this and this and this and this. And then you just start shooting it. And you can also work your camera work to make your editing easier, right? So
100%.
I'll do like a minute long clip of something, then I'll shut the record off. And then I'm not having to upload a freaking 10-minute video just to use a minute of it.
To find that one spot.
Exactly. Yeah.
I'm learning.
Yeah. Oh, it's, and the YouTube thing, like you're talking about the algorithm, that is the most fun and frustrating thing ever, because just when you think you got it figured out, the target moves. Like it's constantly a moving target of what YouTube wants. And it is for sure, like first thing, you got to have quality. Like these guys that think they're, the algorithm's killing them or they're shadow banned or whatever. And then you go look at their channel. It's like, dude, your stuff sucks. That's why people aren't watching it. Like you got to have that to start, which like from what I've seen of your stuff, you're doing an awesome job on filming and capturing everything.
Thank you.
And then it's like, okay, like you're talking about building that story and putting it together. And what do the people who are watching my stuff want to engage with? And then putting that towards, okay, what's the algorithm looking for this month or this week? Right. It's like, it's a game that you can get in the weeds on for sure. For sure.
That's a really good way to put it. The moving target. Because when that bison hunt happened, I thought that was not one of my best works, but I'm trying to put out stuff and I'm like, hey, I have all this footy. I'm going to put it together. And it like kept getting views like every day. And I'm like, and I'm paying attention.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, okay, I guess I figured it out. And then the next one, it had like, you know, 80 views or whatever it was. Yeah. And it's like, okay, I thought my Moto Bears, cause it was on the same kind of idea.
Kind of same lane.
And it didn't do well at all. I don't mind. I'm trying to figure it out before it gets going, if it ever does.
Right.
Just so that I can get those kinks worked out up front, you know, and start putting out some good stuff.
Yeah.
But I'm going to be filming my bear hunts this spring, like all of them, even when we don't kill. I'm going to, I just have some good ideas, I think, just of what I do. And if people want to watch them, cool.
Yeah. That's something too that I like what I.
Drew McIntyre here from WWE. Wielding the Claymore can be a life of chaos. When I'm not dominating in the ring, Chumba Casino is how this warrior takes a wee break. With hundreds of online social games and new weekly releases, there's always something fresh to try. And those daily boosts, next level. Even my free time feels like Valhalla. So when life feels like a battle, kick up your feet, have some fun, and let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Try to look at with views is views relative to how many like subscribers you have, right?
Right.
So like if you're averaging 100 views and you got 400 subscribers, to somebody who has 400,000, that's 100,000. You know what I mean? Like relative to your subscriber base. Yeah.
Yep.
Because like we'll do some stuff that I'm like, gosh, I thought that was a pretty good video and it just didn't do as good as some of the other stuff. It's like, but okay, step back, quit worrying about what you thought it should have got. Look at what it did get and be like, okay, it's worth it. We're at least making progress, you know, like keep taking those steps forwards and seeing, learning from it. Like you're saying, kind of figuring out what they want, but it's a game.
It's wild, but you know, it is what it is. Yeah. I'm not putting any eggs in that basket. I'm just like doing it for fun right now.
Yeah.
And it is fun for me. And maybe like I've watched some videos on YouTube of YouTubing.
Yeah.
And they're like push through the part where you're like, oh, this isn't going anywhere. And cause so I'm just going to keep editing, keep working them. I've got like several more in the queue that I'm excited to push out, mostly snowmobiling right now.
Yeah.
Like mountain sledding, and this Australia hunt should be a pretty good time. So,
oh yeah.
We're staying at a cool lodge. It's like It's like open camping in the mountains, snakes everywhere. Like, so, So, and we kill our dinner. So it'll be really fun with my buddies. So it'll be a good time.
And you said you're guiding out there?
Yeah.
Or
so
over there? I don't even know how you would say that.
Yep, exactly. Yeah. My buddy Eamon owns Broadside Hunting in Australia. It's flying into Sydney and it's a 4-hour drive up from there. He leases some land that, then I don't know if you call it public land or how it works over there, but he leases like several thousand acres. And he's told me, he's like, saw some of my, like he's come out to Montana and he's like, the way that you hunt elk, it's easier to hunt red stags over there. I would love to set you up with some clients. And I was like, super like, I've never hunted a red stag. So I don't know what the roar is about. He's like, here's some calls. Let's figure this out. He goes, within 2 days, you're going to be crushing. So we got out like week to figure it out. And then I have clients coming in and start guiding them on stags and some fallow deer too.
No pressure or anything, right?
Yeah, exactly.
I'm sure you'll be fine. Yeah. It's like, just managing his expectations, right?
That's the thing. It's like also an opportunity that doesn't come around a lot.
Oh yeah.
And so I'm going to do it. You know, for the last 2 years, I was like, you know, maybe I'm not the best guy, but I'm like, let's go do this.
Yeah.
Let's go figure it out.
You're not going to know if you don't go do it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's just
I'm really stoked.
It's just like the YouTube thing you're talking about. Like you spend all this time in this, you know, kind of quieter profession or whatever. And then it's like, you kind of make, it's a leap to start being, trying to be a little bit public with stuff, but do you really want to be 80 years old and be like, gosh, dang, what if I would have tried to start doing something? Or what if I would have went on that hunt in Australia? You know, it's like, sometimes you just got to do it. And if somebody else is going to make fun of you or give you crap for it, it's like, I didn't really care about them anyway.
I've got pretty thick skin, as I bet you do.
You have to.
From our profession.
Exactly. Yeah. You have to.
Yeah. And like my buddy Tanner, he's been a big influence and help. And he's like, dude, we do some fun things, and it may be just our niche, but let's show it off. Yeah. So that's what we're doing.
Yeah. And your Instagram's a great follow too. I think I said that last time that you were on, but people need to go follow it's not Nelson. Your Instagram's JP.
Right. Yeah. I think my IG is Grant_JP. And that came from years back working.
Yeah.
And I haven't ever changed it. So.
But that reminds me of what you just said there. You guys do a lot of cool stuff. I think it was either Cam Haynes or Dudley I heard one time talking about that. And they were like, talking about holding content back to like save it for the next day or whatever. And they're like, no, dude, we're going to do cool stuff tomorrow. Just post it. You know, like we're doing cool stuff.
The same thing.
Yeah. Just put it on there. We'll do more cool stuff tomorrow and we can post that.
Yeah. Otherwise your phone backs up with photos that you don't ever use. And
you forget about stuff.
And they're like, wait, that was your origin camo. Why are you posting it now? And you're with Sika.
You could run into that. Yeah. Let's just
say. Yeah. I won't.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
That could happen.
Yeah.
No, there's and there's something to that too. We like when we first started doing our hunting show, it was way more produced, but also semi-live. And like this year I still kept the semi-live aspect, but it was a little bit less produced. And now we're going to do the more produced, like coming out this August.
Okay.
But there's an aspect of that, at least as close to live as you can get it, that people like. You know, because they want to they want to watch you and be like, oh, hey, that happened like, you know, 4 days ago or a week ago.
Oh, totally, yeah.
Not this happened a year ago? Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Especially in today's society, the way people think about things.
Yeah, it's really bizarre with the attention span and, all of that stuff. Like, even in the sledding world, like, I post a video out snowmobiling in Island Park, Idaho.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's like super deep pow, but it has been dry for a month, people are like, this is fake. Like, when did this happen? Like last year, you know?
Exactly.
Because people are, and I do the same thing. They're looking at YouTube to see the conditions to like pick and choose their days to take a trip.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Yeah, part of the reason we kind of started doing that was for that. So like we would film like Sunday to Sunday and put the episode out Tuesday. That way guys, because we have a lot of out-of-state audience too, guys that come into Illinois to hunt. And that way they could be like, hey, what's going on right now? Where's the rut at? What's the weather like? What are the deer doing, you know? And since we were doing it a little bit different this year, I did daily episodes like throughout October, November. And just for that aspect, because I had people reach out and be like, dude, we would watch those to see what was going on and what to know. That way we could know what to expect when we come up for camp or whatever, you know? And to me, that's cool just to be able to help people out with that too. So
totally. I think that's a very, like every season I'm going into watch the video of that. Like I'll probably be this spring looking at fishing videos of lakes I want to go to or rivers I want to raft. And then in the fall, I'm going to be watching hunting videos, not to on that end of it. It's not going to be to gauge where I'm going to go elk hunting. Cause probably guys aren't hunting where I'm hunting, but just to almost to like get the saliva going again.
Yeah.
You know, I'm out there shooting my bow, come in, throw on a 10-minute, you know, elk video. And I use YouTube a lot for that kind of thing. So I imagine other people do as well.
Oh, for sure. Like, and that's why, like for deer hunting videos, October, November is like the Super Bowl for those kind of videos. Yeah. Right. Cause they're trying to get geared up. And usually around August, I'll start watching hunting videos or deer videos. And then like about now I start watching turkey videos to get ready for that. And then in the summertime, I'll get into more of the fishing stuff. And kind of like you're talking about, it's like, it just kind of gets you ready, gets you in the right mindset.
Yeah.
Gets
the stoke high.
Oh yeah. You're talking about doing like fishing and stuff too. So obviously you do all kinds of stuff. Sounds like you're like true outdoor enthusiast.
Well, yeah. Living in Montana, it's there's opportunity for every season. And that's what I often say is four season sports. And our summers, like springtime, there's some really cool spots because our rivers get blown out, meaning as the heats up, the runoff in the mountains comes down into the river. So it's called like, it blows out to like a brownish color.
Okay.
So you can't fish until about June.
Is that because
sometimes
you can't see the fish just don't like it or what?
No, fish are hungry, but they can't see like your dry fly,
Yeah.
So okay. they're not feeding. If you can find a little clear channel, you'd probably catch fish there.
Yeah.
Cause they're going to be able to see the bugs.
That's interesting.
But yeah, so we have a spot close to us that, you can catch up to 20-pound rainbows and on a fly rig. And so it's really fun. So I'm going to be filming a lot of that. And we usually go over with my sliding camper and camp and barbecue and try to catch as many fish as we can.
And fishing really videos cool. with GoPros kill too. Like there's a guy fairly local to us, 618 Fishing, and he's got, I don't know how many hundreds of thousands of subscribers now. And that's what he does. Like he does, he runs a couple GoPros. He might want to run bigger camera, like just for another angle or whatever, but like a lot of his stuff's just POV GoPros. And for fishing, that's perfect, you know, because everything's right there.
It's like close.
Yeah. Like with hunting, you're like what you were saying, it's a little tough because you can't zoom with them, but, and it's not that it's better than nothing for sure. Like, thank God I had a GoPro this year because the second buck I shot, I turned my camera on, and these cameras we got, the bigger camcorder style, you got to give it a second to turn on before you hit record. Well, this thing popped out, and he was about to be gone. Like, the whole encounter probably was 20 seconds the time I saw him to got an arrow in him. He's at like 40 when he pops out. He was at 45 when I shot him, but I turned the camera on and I just hit record and never looked at it again except when I got it on him. It never started recording. Thank God I had the GoPro back here, and it was actually one of the few times that you could see the deer in the GoPro, and I was able to make something out of it. Like it wasn't the best, but at least I got something. But like fishing and stuff, like you said, everything's close. Like those videos do really well, it seems like.
Yeah. I don't know what to expect. I definitely will be buying a different camera down the road.
Yeah.
But for right now, this is what I'm working with. And we'll see. We'll see how it goes.
Right.
Yeah. I wish I had a bigger camera for Australia.
Oh, yeah. Right.
You know, to like zoom in and show what we're chasing. But
I think
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane. Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
That adventure, the story of that, is going to be intriguing enough for people to at least like an introduction to like Nelson or whatever. You know what I mean? They'll get to see kind of what you're about and what you're doing. That'll be cool.
Yeah, well, thank you. Yeah, I'm stoked.
Yeah. It's interesting you say that about the fish because like here, we've got a river that's local to us and we do a lot of bank pulling on it for channel cat and flatheads.
Okay.
So we do better when actually the river's muddier because it's moving. So like if the river's going up or coming down, like especially if it's going up, since we're bank pulling, it'll push them out to the banks to feed. And then it seems like even though it's going down and it would be pulling them back towards the channel, we'll still do good because I guess we'd get them going back down or whatever. But if the water's moving, we do really well. If it's pretty slow and clearer, then we don't do as good. But it's kind of muddy all the time. It's not like clear water, so I don't know if that has something to do with it. But that's just interesting difference there. I guess they're not as much sight feeding either as probably your rainbows are.
Right, yeah. So what are you using for, like, lure fishing or?
Nope, so, like, when we go set our bank poles, we'll either use shrimp, which is really good.
Okay, so there's an odor.
Yep, it's really good for channel cat. There is I don't know if you call it a wives' tale or a theory, that you won't catch flathead on anything but live bait. And so sometimes we'll use cut bait and we'll catch channels on those. And we have yet to disprove that. We've never caught a flathead on anything but live bait. So, but they are like of the catfish world, in my opinion, if you can get some flathead and cut the belly meat out of them, like we'll put some lemon pepper and some lemon juice on them and grill them like a steak. It is some of the best fish you will ever have.
Oh, that sounds good.
Yeah, it's good stuff.
Yeah, it sounds good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which I think has a lot to do with their feeding. Like if they only eat live stuff, you know, that makes some sense.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, we're fishing trout a lot of times up here, and so they're particular, but the springtime is super fun for targeting them because as the rivers are clearing up, you can catch the big trout because it's not so clear that they can study your fly and decide whether they want to target it or not.
Mm-hmm.
It's like just dirty enough that they'll strike and man, you're catching fat fish.
That's so awesome.
That's cool.
That's awesome. So I won't keep you too much longer, but I did want to talk a little bit on the rescue stuff, the cop stuff, because you're about to be out of that, you said.
We'll see.
Well, maybe, right? I know we got into that a little bit last time, but you said you're in between helicopters right now, but for people who didn't listen last time or whatever, go down that road just a little bit, what you do with that, because I think that's, like, cool stuff. Like,
yeah, I'm lucky to be here. It's a really rare island of work that we have up here. And by that, I mean, like, it's hard to get to. And when new guys come in and they're like, how do I get to the helicopter? Got to get on the sheriff's office. And then eventually the path will open up if you're pursuing
it. It's not a linear thing, probably.
Right. But what we have for Rescue Bird is we just sold our Bell 429. So we had a twin engine helicopter with a hoist rescue. Mm-hmm. And so we're mainly rescue based. We're not like a life flight or alert. So up here we do have that. If you have an injury in the mountains that you can't land a helicopter to, we respond. And so we have a pilot, a hoist operator, and then a rescue specialist that goes down on the cable and will perform interventions on the ground, which is mainly my job right now. And so whether it's usually trauma based, whether it's snowmobiling or dirt biking or cliff fall, mm-hmm. whatever the mechanism there is, we'll go in, we'll go down and assess the patient, whether we've got a backboard or we can put them in what we call a screamer suit, mm-hmm. where we do a quick hasty hoist and then get them up to the helicopter. We'll land and then transfer to a higher level of care. So whether that's landing in the middle of nowhere and transferring to another helicopter mm-hmm. that has paramedics on it, or we land and hand off to an ambulance. So yeah, it's brought us all over. So we service 300 nautical miles from Kalispell Airport. Mm-hmm. So we go into Idaho, touch of Wyoming, and then a lot of Montana, obviously. And man, it's a cool program. It's really cool.
Yeah. That's what is your guys' busiest time of year? Is it like the summertime when it's warmer and more people are out, or do you see more injuries in the winter?
There is a shoulder season, like spring and fall, but so the winter is steady, but the summer is definitely the busiest. I mean, Glacier Park gets, you know, millions of visitors. Summer is definitely busy, from dirt bikes to like fly fishermen to hikers. There's anything in between. You can get people that you just can't land a helicopter near, or rescue teams can't get to in a timely manner.
Yeah.
So we'll launch and go do a hoist.
What is your guys, do you have a shift with that? So like you're on call for 24 hours or whatever, and you have to be so within a certain distance of the hangar
or
whatever?
Exactly. Okay. Yep. So the rules are, so to speak, is 45 minutes from wheels up from the call coming out. I live in Columbia Falls, Montana, so I'm about 15 minutes, 10 minutes to the hangar. Mm-hmm. And you need enough time to get your gear on, get checks, to go over the priority of what we're going to.
Yeah.
And then we're inside 45 minutes for a launch. And it's usually faster than that.
Right.
And to go to the shift question, so right now with my daytime hours at my job, mm-hmm. I'm on call for all four of those days. So Monday to Thursday is my work day. I'm on call for all four of those days. So if a daytime rescue comes out, I respond to the hangar from Kalispell, where my office is, mm-hmm. and then suit up from there.
Nice.
If I pull after hour shift, like let's say tonight I was on call, I'm just hanging around the house. It's kind of nice because it forces you to do garden work or fix something around, you know, that you've been needing on the chore list. And then a page comes out, just respond to the hangar and start suiting up. So,
yeah.
And we're all on that rotation basis. So there's guys that if I'm on a daytime call, there's a nighttime guy that comes out. So it switches at six to six.
Okay. Yeah.
So
that keeps you from having to run over and over and over, I guess, like anything else.
Yeah. We have some guys in our rotation that are on like a 3-day rotation.
So they're just on for 3 days straight?
Yep.
Okay.
And so in the summer, it can happen where we get four or five calls stacked.
Yeah.
And so they'll tap out to another shift, like, hey, I've had, 12 hours of flying. It's like, I got to get somebody else to come in.
Yeah.
So.
Do your pilots have to switch out after so many
Yes.
hours?
And I don't know what their regs are on the flying time, but I do know that they're on the same rotation. They're on like a 3-day rotation or whatever it is. But if they have multiple callouts, they will tap the next pilot in front of them
That makes
and
sense.
then just make it up somewhere along the way.
Yeah. And then,
So.
or I would assume they have to have a ton of flight hours. Are most of your guys ex-military because of that reason?
So no, actually,
Really?
the last pilot we hired was a CHP retired guy. He
Okay.
young guy came out of the California Highway Patrol, did hoist rescue for them. They moved to the Valley and he got picked up with our program.
Okay. So like around here we've got
Yep.
the one AeriVac is services our area mostly. LifeFlight is kind of in our area, but there's four or five bases that have AeriVac in them. So it's obviously not what you're talking about, but it's just air ambulance, right? So
Yep.
a lot of those guys are ex-military because of the flight hour requirement. And the guys that used from the old days, like 80s and 90s, most of those pilots to get their hours were in Vietnam and they were helicopter pilots. And
Right.
they said
Right.
those dudes, because now they're pretty picky about when they'll fly and when they'll not. And there's days you're like, why are they not flying today? And there's other days like, well, I can't believe they're
Totally.
flying. They said
Yeah,
those
totally.
guys, like, as long as they weren't being shot at, they would fly anywhere, anytime, land in any spot.
Dude,
Like, they were just happy to not be shot at.
those non-pilots are gnarly.
Dude.
It's cool reading stories
Some
from
of the
back then.
stories that, like, my old man will tell from where those guys would go and where they would land and set that bird down on, like, a postage stamp somewhere you thought there was no chance. And they just, like, calm, cool, collected, whatever. Hey, guys, what do you need?
Yeah.
You know?
Yep.
Just a
Yep.
different kind of
Yep.
person.
Yeah, it's interesting. I'm not in the process of hiring when we do have an opening, but I know that we get a lot of qualified people and it's really hard selecting who
Yeah.
we hire.
Yeah. Well,
But it's a cool,
it
like I
should
said,
be.
cool island to get to. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
So you're a detective now, you said?
Yep.
So
Yep.
that's what do you like, 8 to 5 daytime shift? You said Monday through
Yeah, 7 to
Thursday,
5
seven to five.
travel time from home, so like check on at the house. I'm like 35 minutes to the office. Yeah, and it's any kind of crime. So like
Okay.
homicide to property crime.
Okay.
So like we all kind of help out. So
Is
I'm
that
not on
because
call
of
tonight.
staffing or is that pretty normal?
Yeah, it's mostly staffing because of the size of our sheriff's office. There's seven of us in the detective unit, and we're all assigned a certain crime types. And then if you're on call, so every 7th week, I'm on call for a week.
Okay.
If that makes sense.
Yeah.
So like any after hour calls, if I like have a homicide, I'll text it out to the boys. Whoever's available will join up and we'll get the crime scene team out and start processing the scene. So, but I would be primary on that particular case. Like for example, I was on call over Christmas and we had four shootings, I want to say.
Nice.
And it was just wild. Yeah, it wasn't good. But so there's a lot of work all of a
Yeah.
sudden,
Yeah.
but I had a lot of hands on deck too. Guys were, coming out and helping. So,
Yeah. We always
yeah.
say that fires come in threes, so if we have one, there's two more bound to come in the next couple of days.
100%, dude.
Yeah. It's crazy how that works. I figured yours is probably the same, but you've done several different
It
things
is.
within law enforcement. I remember talking about last time. What has maybe been your favorite thing, or do you think that's helped you stay in for like almost 20 years now? Because I would think there has to be some burnout if you get stuck, kind of doing the same thing all the
For
time.
sure. I think that my career, man, it's been amazing. It's hard to put a dart on the map from a distance and say this is where it's going to go
Yeah.
because you don't know. You don't know what it looks like. But for me personally, like I never pursued the goalposts of success that everybody had with promotion. I just was like, so I'm a deputy. I'm not a corporal, sergeant, or a lieutenant. Or, any in the command. What I realized early on, you don't have to go towards those goals. What everybody kind of seems is like, this is a ladder, this is just what you do. that comes with meetings. It comes with out of off time requirements, and I didn't really want to pursue that.
Yeah.
However, what I did want to pursue early on was SWAT. That was something that was really like interested me.
Yeah.
And I knew that that would pick up my gun skills and tactics, you know, and all that stuff. So a few years into the sheriff's office, I applied for SWAT, got on SWAT, and I worked there for 10 years. And that was collateral. So it doesn't mean we don't have a full-time SWAT team. Although mm-hmm. now with our op tempo, they probably could use a full-time team.
Okay.
So I spent 10 years there where you're training a lot. We had a high op tempo back then too. Warrant service, barricades, and then any kind of emergency that comes out besides that.
Yeah.
From there, I went to our narcotics unit, and it was a lot of plain clothes, big beard, buying dope, like in bars, like that kind of lifestyle.
Yeah.
I did that for 3, went back to patrol, and then I worked there for a couple of years. Right after I went to patrol, I got on with a helicopter unit.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've been there, oh man, maybe 4 years now. And then in that same time frame, went to detectives. So I've been a detective's year and a half, I want to say now.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been on our air rescue longer than that. But to answer your question, my favorite part of my job would be definitely the helicopter rescue.
Yeah.
I didn't realize. So all along my career, I was part of search and rescue. So with the sheriff's office, we kind of navigate the SAR calls.
Mm-hmm.
We have a huge, a pretty big pool of really awesome volunteers that help out with search and rescue. But to facilitate that, we have to have like a coordinator. We have to have incident command and all the things that go into the leadership of SAR
mm-hmm.
to perform like this is where we're going to search, the lost person behavior, and all the things that go into that. And that's kind of, I think, what navigated me towards the helicopter. As part of Swiftwater, as part of the snowmobile team and the mountain team back when we had that.
Mm-hmm.
And so to answer the question, yeah, the helicopter is by far my favorite thing I've ever done in my career. Yeah. It's wild. Like when you get a call, it's calm, your heartbeat's down, you're getting your gear check done, but you're going to somebody's worst day.
Yep.
And the difference with that versus like SWAT, where if you take action in your community on a belligerent, methed out gunslinger,
mm-hmm.
like there's always lawsuits, there's always like this cloud around
right or, whether you were right or wrong. Yeah,
100%. And so I've been around a lot of those incidents, and then you don't know what you're missing out on until you leave, mm-hmm. so to speak. So like when I left SWAT, it was a pretty big deal. I was like, this is a change of life, da 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 da, and that team just keeps moving.
Yeah,
like they don't miss you.
Right.
Like their tactics get better. It's probably been 6 years since I've been on SWAT, and they look like a whole different team than when I was there.
Yeah.
And it's incredible to see. Like they are spun up, squared away dudes.
That's awesome.
Good buddies of mine. But when you're in it, you don't think that you could ever leave. Like I need to be here. This is part of my identity. This is part of what I train for.
I am a main spoke in this wheel, right?
Yeah, exactly. And then when you leave and you look over at it, you're like, oh, like they didn't really need me. Like they need people. They don't need me.
Yeah.
And the helicopter is probably the same way, but the difference with the helicopter is there's 3 of us on the ship and we're deconflicting our problem together from the pilot to the hoist operator and to me going down on the cable.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, this is what I think is the best method. What do you think, pilot? Yep. I think actually I need to come in with my nose this way. And the hoist operator's like, yeah, I think this we should consider. And so you're like way more figuring this problem out
mm-hmm.
and then going down and doing an intervention or whatever you got to do and getting the patient off the mountain.
Yeah.
On SWAT, it was like early on, I was a perimeter guy. You start at the bottom, like you're outside, you're figuring out like what boots to wear. And I'm joking about that, but
yeah.
But there's a lot to it, and you're not sure really how this wheel is moving down the road.
Mm-hmm.
And then as you progress, like by the end of my time there, we're entry making decisions, and there's 24 guys all pitching in on an idea. And there's probably 10 ways that it can be done right, but we got to all come together on one way.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
So yeah, the helicopter is pretty special, and like getting Christmas cards and getting thank you, and that's not why we do it, but
It doesn't hurt
it's a
anything.
different side. Yeah, it's a different side of life that I didn't realize
Yeah.
was there, and it's pretty cool to be a part of it. And it kind of builds this fire inside you to be the best. Like, I don't want to let my teammates down. I want to keep my fitness strong. I want to keep my mental health there. I want, you know what I mean? Like, do
Yes.
every little, it's always a work in progress.
Yep,
So,
100%. And
yeah.
honestly, that like what you're talking about, you have that feeling of like, hey, I can't leave. They need me. And then you leave and they move past where you were at. And it's
Yeah.
kind of a hard realization. But I think you kind of have to be that way a little bit. If you're not thinking, hey, like I need to be here, you're not gonna be, I don't think you're gonna be your best. You know, I don't think you're gonna want to
I
work to be
agree.
your best. I think you have to
You
be that
have to
way.
have a little bit of a chip on your shoulder, not a big one. You got to check that ego, but
Yeah.
you have to be like, this is why we're here. We're the best. And we're showing up today for somebody's worst day. And even on the helicopter, it's the same way. It's a different vibe over there, though. It's not, it's alpha, but it's not that kind of alpha. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
There's a medicine involvement. There's so many different components to keep your skill set sharp that you're always working on something. Plus, I'm handling detective stuff and like caseload and court and jury trials and then vacation time and Australia. And like
Exactly.
there's like this juggling act going on, and you gotta be sharp at all of it. You can't, because you can't show up to the helicopter giving it halfway,
Right.
because somebody gets hurt. So
Yeah,
yeah.
that's the thing. The stakes are pretty high at that point, so you got to be good. But yeah, man, I'm excited about these videos you got coming out. I'll
Yeah.
be watching. I'll try to share them as I see them too.
Well, thank you.
Anybody that comes out doing it new and like, not that we've only been doing this for 5 years, but
That's a good chunk, though,
like
brother. That's
there are so many guys out there that do it that are especially the older guys that seem so salty and they don't want anybody else to come in and do it. I'm like, there is enough room for everybody in this creator
Yeah.
space, and I think it's just better when we get together and talk and bounce ideas off each other and help each other out. And like, so anybody that's coming into it and doing like you're doing, like you said, you're just kind of jumping in, hey, here it is, and figuring it out.
Yeah.
That's kind of how I started, and like I have so much respect for that. So I think it's awesome what you're doing. I'll try to share it. And before I let you go, make sure tell everybody where they can find you. I'll link it in the description of the episode too, but tell everybody where they can find your YouTube, your Instagram, anything else you want to plug, have at it.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it. I think Joe Rogan says it really well, where he says there's enough cake for everyone.
Absolutely.
And I like that mindset. And
Every now and then that guy has a good one, you know?
Every now and then, once in a while. Yeah. So I'm at Instagram, Grant underscore JP. And then my YouTube channel is Big Sky Backcountry. And it's kind of hard to find so far because it's a low algorithm deal. But if you type in like Nelson Grant hunting or snowmobiling, I think it'll pop. I'm not really sure, but yeah, if you put it there in the notes, I think they might be able to find it.
I'll
But
link it for everybody.
dude, I appreciate it. Also, if you have any suggestions for me, hit me because I'll incorporate those.
I got you, dude. When we
Yeah.
end this, I got a couple things that I'll just share with you that I've kind of found out, but
Perfect.
yeah, man.
Perfect.
But I mean, unless you got anything else, that we'll leave it right there, dude.
Kenny, thank you very much, buddy. It was good talking again.
Heck yeah. We're gonna have to do this sooner than last time. I don't even know how long it's
Yeah,
been. It's over a
maybe
year
after
probably.
Australia when it's fresh on
Yes.
the yeah,
Dude, I'd love to do that.
we'll all right. Yeah, I'll
Cool.
have some good stories.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
Hey, it's Cole Swindell, and when I spend 200 days a year rolling down the highway, the bus can start to feel smaller than a guitar case. Everyone wonders how I stay chill while the hours crawl by. Truth is, one good luck spent on Chumba, and suddenly the trip feels a whole lot shorter. Finding your space, even when there isn't much to spare. Need some chill? Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus TNCs apply. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
With CarGurus Discover, you can skip the filters and describe what you're looking for in your own words. Simply type what you want, and CarGurus Discover instantly surfaces real listings that match your exact needs. It's no wonder CarGurus is the number one most visited car shopping site, according to SimilarWeb's estimated traffic data. Buy or sell your next car today with CarGurus at CarGurus.com. Go to CarGurus.com to make sure your big deal is the best deal. That's CarGurus.com. CarGurus.com.